So we're continuing our study in the book of Proverbs, and what we've been doing is we went through narrative, first nine chapters, not really narrative, but it's kind of story-like, and then what we're doing is we're looking at different topics by group, by theme, by topic, and what we've done is we've started out the kind of like outermost, most difficult, most far-reaching to apply. We've talked about kings and judges and priests and things that when we look around, we don't think of ourselves in that way. And so it's the hardest to make application to ourselves. And we're slowly kind of working our way in. And so we're going to talk about friends and neighbors, and then we're going to talk about parents and husbands and wives. And eventually it's going to be entirely focused on ourselves. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not application to make for yourself. Everything we're talking about is application for yourself. But the way that we make that application takes a little bit more work and involves other people and our influence on them. And as we move further and further in, it's going to be more and more inner focus. So today, we're going to continue to talk about friends and neighbors. And unlike the last topic that we just looked at about kings and priests and judges, there's really not that many verses. So we only have six questions. We should easily finish this section today. And then we'll move into the next section on husbands and wives. So, parenting and children. We'll do that first. All right, so question number one, what is both the great power and danger of friendship of which we should be careful?
Influence.
All right, influence. So how can that be good or bad?
If you have good friends, then you'll get good influence. If you have bad friends, then you'll get bad.
Yes, yes, very good, Titus. All right, ointment and perfume delight the heart, and the sweetness of the man's friend, of a man's friend, gives delight by hearty counsel. So here we have good wisdom, good advice coming from our friends. Very well-known proverb 27:17 is iron sharpens iron. So a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. So you think about a blacksmith and hammering out a sword or hammering out another piece of metal. Does that seem like a peaceful thing? No. So that's part of being a friend. Sometimes being a friend is kind of tough. Sometimes we have to say things that are kind of tough. But taking those sharp edges off of each other, that's just kind of part of it. So even though it may not be the most pleasant thing when those things occur, they end up actually making us sharper as we take off the rough edges off of each other. So friends can encourage, they can advise, and they can help each other. And they do this to tremendous benefit. So as Titus said, how important is it that you have friends that are good friends, that take you in the good way, that show you this? So not surprisingly, 12:26, the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked lead them astray. All right, so we've got several examples as we go through Scripture where we can see that people's friends actually led them to apostasy and led them to destruction. So 1 Kings 12:6-16, we talked about this last time. Remember Rehoboam, when he took over after his father Solomon, he had advice from Solomon's counselors. He didn't like their advice, so he went shopping around and he talked to his friends and they gave him the advice he wanted. And what was the result? The kingdom completely fell apart and he lost 10/12 of the kingdom, all right? So he lost the vast majority of the kingdom and he was never a strong king as a consequence of this. Another example, 2 Samuel 13:3, we have Amnon, who was one of David's sons, who ended up mistreating his half-sister Tamar very badly. And you know why he did it? We're told because he had a friend, Jehonadab, who gave him some advice. And that advice, well, ended up costing Amnon his life. So we have to be very careful who our friends are. So 1 Corinthians 15:33, a familiar passage about be not deceived, evil companions corrupt good morals. This is a general rule, and again, that's the whole point of the do not be deceived. If you think it doesn't apply to you, then it applies more to you than everybody else because you are deceived. All right, so good question. Where are our friends leading us? Who are your friends? Who are your closest friends? Are they people that are trying to get you to do what's right? Are they people that are encouraging you on your way to heaven? Or are they people that their values are somewhere else? So maybe it's time to get some new friends. All right. Question number two. If a person desires friends, then how must he himself behave? Now, this is a very interesting verse. This is one verse where the New King James translates it in a way, and it takes it one direction, and the New American Standard takes it in a complete opposite direction. So this is one of the few cases where, depending on what translation you have, you may get a completely different meaning or sense out of it. Now, is that the end of the world? Is this terrible? Has a great error crept in? No. Both are true. But they're very much true. They're making two completely different points. And they're looking at two different extremes. There's a danger in one extreme and a danger in the other one. Just the different translations are pointing out the errors of different extremes. So let's talk about this. This first question, how must he himself behave? The New King James translation will help us with this one. Or King James, or anything that's based off the older.
If he wants friends, he's going to need to act like a friend.
All right, very good. So let's look at the New King James translation. A man who has friends must himself be friendly. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. All right, let's talk about the first half of the verse. So if you want to have friends, then you have to be friendly yourself. What does that mean? All right, well, just some examples here. You have to be proactive. You have to take initiative. You can't stand back in a corner and say, nobody's being my friend. No, you have to be the one who steps out and talks to people, initiates conversation, and maybe that means introducing yourself or something else that we kind of associate with adults that kids shouldn't have. No, there's a reason why adults do that, because they figured that out. All right, learn how to introduce yourself, start conversations, initiate friendship. So this represents application of what many passages call brotherly love, being tenderly compassionate toward each other. And it's an essential component of being a good Christian and also of a godly unified church. We don't have time to look at all of these passages, but all of them talk about loving your brother, being compassionate, being hospitable. All of these things represent you taking the first step. All right? There's lots of relationships that is this way. If you wait on the other person, it will fall apart. Husbands and wives are that way, and parents and children are that way also as well. You have to, as a child, you have to obey. You have to listen. That's your part of the relationship. All right? The parent can't do all of the lifting. So oftentimes people make the illustration that, and this is especially true of husbands and wives, people say it's a 50-50. Each person has to give half. Wrong. That's not how it works. It will not work that way. It's 100%, 100%. Each person has to give themselves entirely. Now, that's extremely true of marriages. All right? That's extremely true of husband and wife. Obviously, friends, it's not going to be that way. You're not in that kind of a relationship. But there's still a grain of truth for you to learn from that. You can't just expect the other person to do everything. You got to make sure that you're stepping out as well. And we can throw in with this, in this first point here, that it also, as we think about our behaviors and the way that we act, each one of us has some eccentric attributes. There are things that make us different than everybody else. But if we go out of our way to be as different and maybe have like a chip on our shoulder or do anything like that, that's not being friendly. That's going to keep people away from us, all right? So we don't want to go to one extreme where we end up trying to give up everything about us that's unique or special or different. That's not what I'm saying at all. But if we're trying to be different, if we're trying to be difficult, then we can't be surprised when we don't have the friends that we want to have. All right, that's going to be a natural consequence of that choice. So this part is certainly true. Let's talk about the New American Standard Version. A man of many friends comes to ruin. All right, if you want to be friends, you got to be friendly. If you want to have lots of friends, you're going to come to ruin. All right, what's the lesson here? All right, there is a different extreme, but there's still a very good lesson. So if we are consumed with having too many friends, if all we care about is friends, and if all we care about especially is what they think of us, we're doomed. All right? Now, here's the reason. Those friends are not going to have, the majority of people are not going to have the will, the opinion, and the judgment that God will have. They're not going to take us in the direction that we need to go. So a perfect example of this is John 12, 42 and 43. Talks about Jesus when he came, that there was many people that believed on him. They did believe that he was the Son of God. They were convinced. But it says that they refused to confess him. They refused to say they believed because they were afraid of being thrown out of the synagogue. And then John says, because they love the praises of men more than the praises of God. All right, this is the other extreme we have to avoid. We have to make sure that it's not pleasing everybody, having all these friends, that is driving us, motivating us, and that's setting our standard. It has to be God that's setting our standard. At the end of the day, all paths end in Him. And that's who we're going to stand before. That's who we're going to have to give an account to, and that's who's going to judge us. And it's His opinion that is the only one that ultimately matters. All right, so make sure that we're setting His praise above those that are around us. So don't go to the other extreme. Now, either way you take this verse, it doesn't change the last half of the verse. Both of them translate the last half the same. There is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And we'll talk about this a little bit more as we go. But these are very special friends. And so for right now, let's just say value them. Appreciate them, love them, and thank God for them. Because they are a blessing. And not everybody has those right now. And just because you don't have one of those right now, don't be too upset about it. Just because you don't have one now like this doesn't mean you won't have one in the future. All right? So when you have them, be thankful for these gifts, these blessings that come from God. All right, before we get into question three, any questions or comments about what we've been talking about? Michael?
Makes me think of the golden rule.
Okay.
You know, we must treat others like we want to be treated. And that's on all sides of that. If we want somebody to help us when we're failing, mm-hmm. then we need to be able to do that with others. And that takes tenderness and compassion, but it also takes strength and courage. The opposite side of that, if we want to be friendly and have good friends, we also have to accept their intricacies, their oddities, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're two different people, so we're going to have to learn how to negotiate those differences. You know, some people might like one thing versus another thing.
Yeah,
I might like soccer. Somebody else might like American football. Can we still get along with those things? And that's, you know, just one kind of example. But there's there's all kind of paths that leads to.
Yeah, yeah. And that reminds us, like a lot of the application we've been making in the previous classes about, again, like being a king or a priest or a judge or something like that. Some of those applications may seem like they're very far away, but learning how to take turns, for example.
Yeah.
You know, the drawing the straws that we talked about in previous classes. I mean, those, what do you want to do this time? I don't know. What do you want to do? Okay, let's flip a coin. Let's choose something. We'll do it next time you decide. All right, those are good applications of that.
And the next one is, where do you want to go eat?
Yeah, 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 exactly. All right, any other questions or thoughts?
This may not be what you're looking for with this question, but having a good name brings a sphere of influence with which we can bring glory to God and each other's value.
Yeah, yeah, very good. So let me say one thing before we leave question two. So as I said, it's kind of a struggle doing some of that application. If you have questions about that, come see me. I'd be glad to talk to you and help in that. And whether it's the past question that we just finished talking about, it's this one or anything else. All right, so as Isaac said, how is a good name and loving favor preferable to riches? This is something that allows us, it provides a resource, if you will, something we can use, that we can ultimately use to bring glory to God. But it's something that can be helpful to us as well. And just like the last question, there's also an extreme where you can go too far with this as well. All right, 22:1, a good name is to be chosen. All right, so you have a choice here. Your behavior determines your good name or your name, whether it's good or bad. So choose that rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. So why is this more beneficial? 10:7, the memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. All right, here's the other extreme. What happens to the wicked? They're completely forgotten. So why is this helpful? All right, so I like what Isaac said about it being a resource or something that we can use. A good reputation is something that you can repeatedly cash in, if you will. All right, just like the stock market, you are on the market. You have a name and you have a price. You have a value, if you will. All right. And your value can go up or your value can go down based on your reportings. All right. Based on what you're able to do. So if you have a good name, this is something that you can use over and over again. All right. So many times there is a, like this is one example. Here's a question. Did somebody say something? Did this happen? Did that occur? Oh, so and so said this happened. They never lie. They always get it right. They're very observant. That person is trusted. That person is listened to because they have a good name and they're cashing it in at that moment. You may be actually telling the truth, but if you don't have a good name, a good reputation, will people listen to you? Not unless you just happen to be saying what they want to hear, in which case they're just using you. They're not listening to you in that case. So riches you can spend once, a good name over and over and over again. It yields rewards. So it's more endurable. It will bring you also, besides just the repeated use, it will bring more peace, more satisfaction ultimately than riches, and it's a better indicator of actually who we really are. Now, can the people around us get us wrong? Absolutely. Can we have a good name and be a scoundrel? Absolutely. Can we have a bad name and actually be a great person? Absolutely. But those are rare. They tend to be exceptions. 27:21, the refining pot is for silver and the furnace for gold, and a man is valued by what others say of him. All right, remember what we talked about in Proverbs, the structure of these verses. First half always has something to do with the second half. It's either saying the opposite or it's saying the same thing with slightly different words. So how is it that a refining pot, silver, and the furnace for gold have to do with the man being valued of what others say of him? We are all tried by fire. just like gold, just like silver. And when we come out of that fire, it shows who we are. Is there something valuable on the other side, or are we burnt up? Is there ash on the other side? All right, people see that. They recognize it, and they say, oh, I know what this person went through. I know how they endured this thing. Do you see how they handled this situation? All right, those are our trials by fire that people see, they observe, and they learn who we are, and they hang on to those things. So, again, make sure you're choosing that name. All right, so let's talk about wealth. Well, before I go to this, anything on the last question? All right, let's talk about wealth. How does our wealth, how much riches we have or lack thereof, how does it affect our friends?
Attracts the fake friends like flies.
All right, very good. Very good. Well said, Isaac. All right, so it attracts the fake friends like flies. So wealth makes many friends, and the poor is separated from his friend. Many entreat the favor of the nobility, and every man is a friend to the one who gives gifts. All the brothers of the poor hate him. How much more do his friends go far from him? He may pursue them with words, yet they abandon him. All right. So Proverbs is dealing with some practicalities. It's not offering judgment as far as this is good or this is bad. This is a reality. All right. So make sure, as like we said before, there's some things, and we'll talk about this more in a minute. There's some bad things that happen to us in life, and we need friends to help us in those cases. This is not what this is dealing with. This is dealing with people, think like the prodigal son. Remember, he came and he asked for the wealth of his father. Give me my inheritance now. He took it, and he had lots of friends, as long as he had money to spend. And then once the money was spent, what happened to him? He had nothing. He couldn't provide for himself. And he ended up working in a pig pen, feeding the pigs, which was the most dishonorable, most shameful job that a Jew could possibly have. And he sat there and thought, I wish I had what they had to eat. And it says that no one would help him. All those friends that were there before, where were they afterwards? When he needed help, they were gone. All right, these were fake friends, as Isaac named them. So everybody needs some help sometime. We'll talk about that in a little bit. What we're talking about right now is the choices that we make. So first of all, don't take advantage of your friends. Just constantly requesting help. I don't know if this word means anything to you all, but we used to say, don't mooch off your friends. Just constantly leeching things out of them, okay? Stand on your own feet. Make sure you're not just constantly taking advantage of somebody else. All right, so because if you do that, they will run from you. Just like this person, all right? So, again, we're talking about choices. We're not talking about going to people in times of need. So, you got to be careful. Friends do good things for each other. I'm not saying you should never give your friends gifts or anything like that. Just be careful that you're not giving too many gifts and you're attracting people, basically buying friends. So, because if you do, they're not going to be real friends. So, be careful with that. And even in the sense of real friends, genuine friends, if we're just constantly kind of spoiling them, we may end up ruining them as well. So just that's something to be careful of. It's a little bit more rare. But if you give them too many things, you can turn them into fake friends, where that's the only thing that they think about, that they're drawn to. Oh, I get to go do this or whatever. So be careful about managing that as well. All right, we kind of talked about this a little bit. And so this one may be pretty easy. But how are fair weather friends different than true friends?
That can be relied on. It's a relationship of grace, not just one person giving to the other.
All right.
Gifts being exchanged back and forth.
Okay, good. Good, Isaac. So these are people that we can rely upon. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity, 17:17. So, again, unlike the fake friends that we were talking about, when we are in need and we need help, our real friends, they don't evaporate like the dew, like we talked about in previous classes. They continue, they stay, they persevere with us. So, I like this. A brother is born for adversity. Especially as you get older, as your siblings need help, you will help them. Why do you help them? Hopefully it's because you love them and they are a friend. But we all feel some obligation to help our brothers and sisters. And that's part of why that family is there. So as life goes on, those children can help each other. But they didn't choose to be born into that family. I never got a choice on who my mother and father was. I didn't get a choice on who my brothers and sisters were. I was just born into that. So that's an obligation or responsibility relationship that just comes to us. But friends, though, we all choose our friends. None of us are forced to have certain friends. Those are friends that we choose, all right? So there's something that's special about that. A man who has friends must himself be friendly. We talked about this already. And a friend, there's a friend who sticks closer than a brother. So true friends are always helpful, even in the middle of the night. So you remember the Lord's parable in Luke 11, 5 through 8, where it talks about a man who has some surprise company, and he goes and knocks on his neighbor's or his friend's house and says, "Help me, I don't have enough food for them. Can you give me some food?" And the person doesn't listen and kind of ignores him, but the friend is persistent, and eventually his friend gets up and actually helps him. Now, it's a parable more about actually persistence and being persistent and asking for help, but it's also a good illustration of how friends actually need each other sometimes, and they ultimately come through if they are true friends, even if they may not want to be at first. All right, so good friends can prove to be more helpful and reliable and dependable than our own family. So this takes us into the next verse. Confidence in an unfaithful man in the time of trouble is like a bad tooth or a foot out of joint. So in all those things, think about it. You put pressure on it, you need it, you rely on it, it hurts. It's not strong, or it hurts you in some way. You can't rely on it. You can't depend on it. That's, if you've got an unfaithful friend, an unfaithful man in the time of trouble, then that's what they'll end up doing to you. Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend. And that's kind of interesting. That's not something we think about. This was my dad's friend. This was my mom's friend. And so that brings me into some obligation as well. If they need help, don't forsake them. Don't go to your brother's house in the day of calamity. Why? What's my alternative? Better is a neighbor nearby than a brother far away. That's kind of interesting. The idea that I need help, I've got a brother out of state. Do I go to them or do I go to my friend that's nearby? Well, he's my brother, I should go to him. Actually, you shouldn't. This is advice to foster and develop the relationships for those that are close by. Let's talk a little bit more about that. So whatever you do, here's the lesson. Don't be that unfaithful friend. Don't be that fair weather friend. Don't be that person that when you're needed, that you are the tooth that's broken or the foot that's out of joint. They lean on you and they fall and they hit the ground. Don't be that person. Now, so we don't want to be the fair weather friend. Now, at the same time, if your friend is asking you to do something that's wrong, and like, don't let me down, man, you got to come through. Help me out in this. Help me go take this thing or mistreat this person or what, do something that's wrong. Okay, no, you're actually letting them down by going through with them. You should stand up and instead say, no, this is not right. We're not going to do that. So don't take this too far. Don't let this actually be something. So instead, be somebody that is there present in this time of need. Be this great relief, and it will produce gratitude and loyalty from them as well. Now, back to that last part that we were talking about a while ago. Why would you want to foster these relationships that are nearby? Because they're there. That's part of when we'll see this again. They're there for your help and for your benefit because you help each other. We often talk about like a support network. Well, our local friends, church, and other relationships, they're part of that support network that we have, that we each of us needs. Someday I may be strong, I can help somebody else, but I guarantee you there's a day coming when I will be weak and I will need help of some kind or another. So these relationships, you can almost think of them as like insurance. They're there to help you. And if you never develop those relationships, sooner or later, you're going to be like that guy who needs help in the middle of the night. And you can't get to your brother who's out of state. You can't get to your mom and dad or your sister who lives on the other side of the country. You need help right then. And it's going to be too late to try to generate those relationships and try to foster that. All right, you're not going to have anything to rely upon. So Michael can tell you, I can certainly tell you, I've lived in other places besides North Alabama. Lived in Texas for a while, lived in Florida for a while, lived in South Alabama and Auburn for a while. And in all of those places, I had no family. All of my friends were people I had never met, never seen before. And I had to start from fresh, start from scratch, develop new friends, develop new relationships. And that was, each of those occasions were a great part of my lives. And I made new friends and new relationships that if I needed to, I could still even now go to them for help, even though they're far away from me. So make sure that you're also doing that. There's incredible value and rewards in developing those relationships as you have opportunity. All right. Any thoughts or questions on this before we go to the next one? All right. Now, in contrast to everything we've been saying about good neighbors and good friends and relying on each other, how does the wicked view their neighbors? Noah?
They despise them and wish to do them evil.
All right. So think about our neighbors. We've talked about helping them and giving them things that they need. How is it that their neighbor wants to bring evil on them? How do they do evil to them? If you apply that with what we've been talking about.
Well, they let bad things happen to them. They don't step in to help.
That's right. So every time that, and this kind of goes without saying, but just to emphasize it, every time we help a neighbor, what are we doing? We're sacrificing our money, our time, our resources. We're giving up things that, honestly, I would like to be able to use for myself. We're making sacrifices for somebody else. So if I'm evilly minded, then I see this brother in need, this neighbor in need, and what do? No, sorry, I can't help you. Meanwhile, I've got a closet full of stuff that I could share, but I don't want to because I don't want to give it up. Right? So this is the kind of wickedness that we're talking about. They have the opportunity to help their neighbor, but they don't. And so that makes sense when he says the soul of the desire, the soul of the wicked desires evil. His neighbor finds no favor in his eyes. So he comes to him, he needs help. Sorry, no mercy, no grace, no favor, keeping it all to myself. All right, so this is how the wicked treat their neighbors. So when the wicked look at other people, they are only useful to them as much as they can be used and help them. In other words, what do I get out of it? If I don't get anything out of it, then I'm not interested. You need help, what do I get out of it? Nothing? Sorry. All right, this is how the wicked work. So mercy, helpfulness, those kinds of things, they don't even understand. It doesn't mean anything to them. It's of no value to them. So two warnings. Watch out for those kinds of people. Stay away from those kinds of people. Don't go ask them for help. They're not going to be helpful. And certainly beware turning into those people. Now, another way that they end up kind of taking advantage of them is, look, a man who bears witness against his neighbor is like a club, a sword, or a sharp arrow. He's just a weapon that's just sitting there, a tool that's dangerous, waiting to mistreat his neighbor. Okay, so how would this happen? Again, if you go back to that society, you've got a man who lives next to you. He has some land. I lie and say he mistreated this person. He killed this person or did this person. And he's stoned. He's killed. And his wife and children, they can't support the land. They can't take care of it. They have to leave. Maybe they die. Oh, look, here's this land right next to mine. And nobody's using it. What's motivating me? I'm being driven to take advantage of the things, mistreat somebody that's next to me so I can take their stuff. All right. That's the general idea. Now, that looks different in our day and age, but we can still, again, as we talked about last time, we can make fun of other people. We can embarrass people to bring shame on them that we think is bringing glory to us. Now, it's not bringing real glory, not in God's eyes for sure, but we can make application if we use a little imagination with these things that even seem far away. So there's full manipulative scheming people who are in reality nothing more than tools themselves. They're only useful as weapons for pain and judgment. God often talks about taking these kinds of people and bringing them together, ramming them together to destroy themselves and bring judgment on each other. We don't want to be those kinds of people and want to stay away from them. So as we kind of conclude this section, we've been talking about neighbors. You may be thinking about your next door neighbor, but that's not really what the Bible means when it talks about neighbors. So in this parable of the Samaritan in Luke 10, 25, 37, we have this Pharisee who said, "Who is my neighbor?" And he asked Jesus this, wanting to justify himself and get himself out of obligation to love his neighbor as himself. Notice in this parable, Jesus talks about the Pharisee that comes by who saw him, and then he talks about the priest or the Levite who came by and he looked and he passed by on the other side. It was only the Samaritan who saw him and had compassion. And so I'd like to suggest to you, a neighbor is anybody that you see that is in front of you that needs help. They're part of your community. They may not be living next to you, but if they're there in front of you and they need help, they're your neighbor. All right, so the Samaritan, when he saw him, he had compassion, bandaged him, took him to an inn, paid for him to be taken care of. And Jesus asked, so which of these three was the neighbor to the person who got mugged? The one who showed mercy. Go and do likewise. So this is our expectation, to be like this good Samaritan. So everywhere you can, here's the lesson, everywhere you can, as much as you can, show mercy, help those that are around you. They are your neighbor, especially those who are closest to you. Again, the neighbor nearby versus the brother far away. Develop the closer ones first. That's our obligation. These two passages are helpful because they also talk about helping each other, but they make the point as much as you have opportunity. There is more help needed in the world than we can possibly do. All right, God doesn't call us to bear responsibility for those things. It's only as much as we have opportunity. So these great things are limited by that. All right, any questions about that? Oh, we had one more. How might friendship and honey be similar? Second bell's not rung yet, has it? Okay, good. How are friendship and honey similar?
Too much of a good thing is bad.
Yes, exactly. All right, so have you found honey? Only eat as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and vomit. seldom set foot in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. My father-in-law had this expression, familiarity breeds contempt. And it's the same kind of idea here. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, it will be counted as a curse to him. All right. So we got two examples of this, whether it's needing help or it's when somebody, when they're down and we're like, hey, bright and cheerful. And maybe they just don't want to be bright and cheerful at the moment. Maybe they just want to grieve for a moment and get something out of their system. In both of these cases, too much of these things, even the best friends, can make you sick of them. So there is a time and a place for everything. As Ecclesiastes said, to everything there is a season. Everybody needs, this is an important lesson, everybody needs some time to do the things that they want to do, even best friends. Even people get tired of each other. You ever heard somebody say, you're smothering me, right? People generally don't say that, but because by the time they say that, it's relationships in a pretty bad spot. But if we're not careful, we can push it to that spot by just simply just being in our friend's house, our neighbor's house too often until eventually they get sick of us. So, and the other side of this is, again, this is back to the mooching. Make sure that you're not so insecure and so emotionally dependent that you just end up mooching emotional support and time out of your friend continually until they have nothing left to do anything else. All right. So this, oftentimes we call this jealousy. So pace yourself, pace your friendship, give it room for other friends and time for this to grow. Don't just take somebody all to yourself and then be upset when they want to have other friends too. Okay. All right. Again, if you have any questions about any of this, please come back and talk to me. We'll pick up with this last part next time about taking a dog by the ears and meddling. So we'll finish this and then parenting and children next time. Thank you all very much. Thank you.